Are we saving money? No water. Saving money for January.
Here comes another That's a Dive. What's up, Tad Pals? We're back. Another That's a Dive. I'm here with PJ and producer Roy. I'm digging our new open. So what was the sound that we played?
It was
last week
or 2 weeks ago. It was this is for our lovers.
Oh, the Mourinho. Yeah, and then we did Mourinho again.
For his lovers. Yeah.
We won't do a Mourinho sound every time, but
there's a good chance it's going to be him a lot.
Yeah, it's going to be him a lot. We're basically just going to grab great sound bites from the week and start the show every week with our favorite. And that was a good one. Funny Jose.
You know, Charmin Jose.
Charmin
is he
Jose
back?
Is back a little bit. And I love it because he's just been moping Jose for too long. And we're watching his Manchester United right now in a game that doesn't matter. They're already through. Oh, it matters, but they're already through. Sitting in the studio watching some Champions League action. We'll get into Champions League in one of our topics today. Before we dive into topics, though, let's talk about reviews. Got one from By the Diz, and the stadium that he would most want to go see a game in. He said, first off, love the pod. Thanks for bringing it every week. I'm a Spurs supporter and would have said White Hart Lane, but now that it has passed, I mean, new White Hart Lane, you can go for on the new stadium isn't done yet. See, it's not ready yet, so he can't go. Yeah. When it's ready, it's going to be his choice.
Yeah.
He wants to go to the Signal Iduna Park in Dortmund, also known as Westfalen Stadium. Looks incredible. It does. I mean, the yellow wall, insane. When I saw the massive TIFO in the Champions League in 2013, I knew this was where I needed to go. I hope I get a chance to get there. Of course, it's not terrible that Pulisic is there for now. Keep up the good work. By the Diz, thanks for the review. Keep reviewing and tell us the stadium you would most like to go see a game in. I want to see one there, too. That's a really good one.
He brings up a good point, though. Pulisic, how much longer is he there?
Can't be there much longer. With the teams that are in for him, I think this is his last season. And also, you know, he's kind of in and out of the team a little bit.
Yeah.
Sancho...
I mean, spot.
Ooh,
yeah,
that kid is absolutely ridiculous. We saw some of his skills when the U.S. went to England to play in a friendly, and Sancho was tearing up. I think it was Yedlin on one side of the field. He was playing off to the left. But Pulisic still setting up goals, still playing well for Dortmund. I think this summer it happens. He makes a move, maybe to the Premier League. But will he still be playing Champions League? At a new club, depending on where he goes. And our topics today is going to be about clubs that drop in and out of Champions League because of motivational problems, maybe. We'll talk about some quotes from Maurizio Sarri questioning the attitude of Chelsea players. The next topic, we'll talk Manchester City. Are we seeing some weaknesses? Are we seeing some chinks in their armor a little bit? And then Champions League update. Let's start there. So, wow. We went from possibly the Manchester clubs being the only teams left in the Champions League to all of them staying in. Mm-hmm. Incredible, incredible day yesterday in the Champions League. I watched the game in Williamsburg. I went to Banner Bar. Awesome place to watch a game. Yep. It was sort of half Spurs, half Liverpool fans. We were in the back. I went with Musto, producer Adam. Had some friends that I played with. Edson Buttle was in town. Got to hang out with him. Okay. Some people who have been playing in my Street FC games showed up. It was just I love watching games there. It's a great atmosphere. If you haven't been to Banner Bar, go there. Awesome place to watch a game. And it was crazy because we were sitting in a booth in the back of the bar. And we could only see the Spurs game on the projector and the Inter game on a tiny little TV to the right and couldn't see the Liverpool game. But up front by the bar, the Liverpool fans were watching their game. And we just heard oohs and ahs, a lot of excitement. Salah missed an early chance. And so I'd jump up and look over the booth just to see what was going on. But what a day for both clubs.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. I didn't watch the Liverpool game, so I don't. Did you watch it?
I was flipping back and forth.
It had to have been a pretty good performance.
I mean, they probably should have won 5 or 6-1. If you consider, you know, if you're going to give Liverpool some goals, you could give that one that Alisson made a great save towards the end that bailed
them
out.
It was a huge save.
But Mane missed a few chances.
Salah missed a couple.
So they were dominant. They deserved to go through, no doubt. You know, it was scary there because it was only 1-0 the whole time, and it gave Napoli the chance to get that equalizer, and they almost did, but luckily Alisson came through for them. And also, by the way, he probably won't get as much credit, but Van Dijk was just solid throughout the day, which isn't that shocking.
Yeah.
But it's just those two players. Van Dijk wasn't there a year ago. Alisson came in over the summer. It just shows you the difference having those two in there can make make for Liverpool.
It's amazing what spending close to $200 million on two really, really good defenders does to your defense. I honestly think Van Dijk not only was the best summer signing, I think he's continuing to make the argument that he's the best player in the world right now.
Best player or best defender? Best player. Really?
Honestly, okay. I think you don't really ever recognize defenders. Mm-hmm. And I think it was it Chris Sutton? There was someone who made this argument a few months ago and got absolutely crushed for it.
Yeah.
But I see the argument. Listen, he's one of the top five players in the world right now. I challenge anyone to list a better defender right now in terms of all around game, an absolute beast in terms of how good he is in the air, covers a lot of ground, reads the game incredibly well, very, very intelligent, excellent with the ball out of the back. He's dangerous on set pieces. Yeah. He can play 1v1. He can direct. He can organize. I mean, he's the complete modern player. It's absolutely incredible. And I think if you're gonna recognize talent, typically the Messi Ronaldo debate always ends up in a numbers game, mm-hmm. right? And it's kind of why Messi's always the best player in the world for me, because the eye test and what he does, it doesn't matter what the numbers are. It's absolutely mm-hmm. remarkable, completely irresistible. But Van Dijk is just by the way, an amazing defender to watch. I'm typically not entertained by watching center backs. I mean, you know, back in the Lothar Matthäus kind of Beckenbauer, you know, even Blanc with France a little bit, you know, guys with a bit of swagger that bring the ball out and you know, have that flair and that attacking presence. You know, Cafu was the first kind of like the true attacking fullback that I saw, that I was entertained watching mm-hmm. them, and then Roberto Carlos and that whole, but Van Dijk is just, he's a joy to watch.
Yeah,
he's brilliant.
He's just an athlete, really. I mean, when you he's
as athletic as it gets. But like when you combine his athletic ability with a very cerebral and skillful game, it's like he and John Stones. Like, John Stones isn't as good as Van Dijk, and I love John Stones, but both of them could play. I mean, they could play a six, they could play an eight. Mm-hmm. I mean, they're incredible.
Well, I was going to say, I mean, Van Dijk, before he went to Liverpool, was rumored to be Guardiola's top choice to come in, and you can clearly see why.
Yeah.
He could. He would easily.
God,
fit
imagine
in.
If he had him. I mean, him, Stones, and Laporte.
Oh, three center backs.
That wouldn't be fair. So yeah, I mean, Spurs, they were playing a weakened Barcelona team, but even a weakened Barcelona, I mean, you know, Dembele was out there and mm-hmm. Busquets came in, Messi came in, even a weakened Barcelona team at the Nou Camp is challenging. And, you know, Spurs performed really well. And Harry Winks played the holding position by himself, which was a challenge, but I think played really, really well. I mean, what they've lost with Dembele as a holder and his ability to bring the ball out and be a deep playmaker and get them out of trouble and always play vertical, always play positive up the field. Harry Winks brings that more so than Dyer, but you do lose a bit of physicality when Dyer's not out there. So I thought that was a big call by Poch that I paid off. Son again, mm-hmm. you know, he missed a chance. I wouldn't say he missed it. It was actually a really good save, but Son had another good game. I mean, Spurs, man, it's amazing that there isn't more talk about them, but I just wonder, Spurs and Liverpool, and this was the debate, They're through to the round of 16. So all four English clubs through to the round of 16. Yep. Can you make an argument that maybe not for Spurs, because I think Spurs are good enough to compete in both competitions, and top four is very realistic, and they've got a good shot at that. And I don't see Champions League undercutting that all that much. But I think you can make an argument, and Van Dijk had a good quote on this, saying, if you're a Liverpool fan and you say you want us out of the Champions League, you're not a Liverpool fan. Mm-hmm. But is there an argument that this isn't a good thing for Liverpool? Just if they're top of the table, if they have a chance at winning the title, and they have a true chance, I think even doubters or people that didn't have them there have to believe they have a chance now. Are their chances better, or would they have been better if they were out of the Champions League and Manchester City were still in? Where are you on that?
I see the argument. I think it really only matters if they make a deep run in the Champions League. Because first off, the Champions League is not going to return until February. End of February, I believe, is when the knockout round.
Well, the business end of the Champions League is the business end of the Premier League.
Exactly. So that's the thing. But let's just say they draw Barcelona.
Yeah, get knocked out. Yeah.
And they get knocked out. Then you can still say, hey, we got to the round of 16.
Yeah.
We didn't get as far as we did last season. But we still made progress.
I see that.
And they survived. I think to say that they got out of the group of death, or one of the group of, you could argue, actually probably both these groups are the two groups of death.
Yeah.
I think that's that can be something that can give them momentum, that they got out of this group with Napoli and PSG in it.
So kind of almost the best case scenario for them is to get a terrible draw now. argument, on my side of things. Because I do think, listen, Liverpool aren't nearly as deep as Manchester City are.
Yeah.
So Liverpool can't afford to put a very strong team out in the Champions mm-hmm. League and still chase the Premier League title, because they don't have the depth to do what Manchester City's doing. So, Manchester City... I'm watching the game right now. I didn't see the lineups. I see Gundogan out there. Is that Foden as well? I think Foden's out there.
We're playing a back three, it looks like. Laporte.
Yeah, it looks
and
like Otamendi's out there. Yep, listen, they're through already, so it's different. I'm just saying they can, De Bruyne will be back, you'd think, towards the home stretch. And then you have Bernardo, you have Silva, you have you have De Bruyne, you have Sané, you have Sterling, you have Mahrez. They can rotate and not lose any quality and not drop the level. I just Lallana and Sturridge, and there are players that aren't going to keep the level as high. That are good players, but they're gonna play Salah. They're gonna play Mane. They're gonna play Van Dijk. They're gonna play all of these players in the Champions League, and then you're gonna face a league that's incredibly challenging with a team that's going to be tired, when Manchester City can rotate more and be fresher. And I think it's a little bit of a disadvantage for Liverpool if they go as far as Manchester City do.
I guess that kind of brings up, we're going to probably talk about this a lot more as it gets closer, but January transfer window coming up. What's the one area you think the number one area Liverpool should address to maybe help with those depth issues?
I think that... I'm not totally sold on Fabinho in the holding role. He's good. I haven't really seen him bring the level up yet. And Henderson has his injury issues. And that's one area I'm worried about. I don't know if that's the priority, because Wijnaldum has played that role really well when he's been asked to play it. And they're stronger defensively, so it's not as much a concern. I just think the striker position, in terms of how they're doing it, where it seems Salah's being run through the central position, whether it's a partnership or a 4-3-3, he's being used centrally a lot more. You could justify it with the goals, right? It's the return has improved since he's been pushed in that position. I'm surprised a bit that Klopp has used that strategy when Salah was so good last year from the wing.
Yeah.
And I think ultimately he's gonna give him freedom. It's just to free him up so he doesn't have to track back.
Yeah.
So I just say there needs to be another center back I think.
Well, especially with the injuries.
With Gomez.
Gomez, yeah. And now, did you see Joel Matip, 6 yeah. weeks, it looks like, for Connor.
So
Bowen,
they need a center back, and I would say another one of the forwards on the top line, someone who can be a winger or goal scorer. Because yeah. I don't know if he really trusts Sturridge the whole way.
Yeah, I mean, we saw Origi come back in, too. He got the big goal against Everton, albeit a lucky goal.
But it's just,
you don't trust him.
Well, you need something better than that.
We have Solanke there. You don't really trust him.
I love him. He's just, he needs to go out on loan and play more.
The thing is, they have the bodies. They're not ones you can fully trust. It's coming in.
But go through City again, right?
That's what I mean. Those bodies you trust.
Well, you don't lose anything. You drop out Sané and you get Mahrez. Or you drop out Mahrez and you get Sané, or drop out Sterling and you get one of it's just Kevin De Bruyne and the players they will have on the bench are starters for Liverpool.
Yeah,
you know, so it's like it's tough to think that they have the depth to go deep in that competition and win the Premier League.
I think there is one player who we still haven't fully seen that can step up and probably show us more. And he can play a variety of positions, and that's Naby Keita.
Yeah.
I still don't think we've seen the best of him yet. I know he had some injury issues. He's kind of back into it now, but he hasn't really earned his way as a regular starter, I guess.
Yeah.
But he could be interesting because he is someone that could play on the wing if they needed to. He can play, you know, as a wide midfielder, even as central midfielder. So that it'd be interesting to see what happens with him the next couple months and as they go into that round of 16.
Well, we have done segments on the show recently in the past season saying what's up with England in Champions League. Mm-hmm. So all four teams go through to the round of 16. So that's a good thing for the Premier League, the brand, the English clubs that they're still in that competition. Yeah. Of the four that are still in, which two do you think have the best? Now, draw is everything, right? I mean, Pep says that winning a cup is luck based on things like this, the draw. I mean, who would you say are the two teams that can go the deepest?
I'd probably say Man City and Liverpool. And I know that's maybe the easy answer. Man City's obvious just for the reasons we mentioned with their depth.
I think Spurs could go further.
Well, that's the thing. If I'm not going to pick Liverpool as a second, and he, like we said, the draw is everything, but
you can't rule out Jose.
I know. I think it's probably
he's built
United
for this competition.
Yep. He'll find a way, no matter who it is, even if they get Barcelona drawn or whoever, you know, he knows how to play against those teams. And the players on that squad are still good enough that he can get them to get, you know, wake up for a game, a two-legged affair and come away with something. Probably.
By the way, Ederson, what a save. Watch this save. Absolutely.
14th
insane.
Minute.
How about these
Hoffenheim
goalkeepers recently?
Yeah.
I mean, Alisson, Kepa, Ederson.
Yep.
I mean, it's just a new era of goalkeepers that can play in the field that also, forget their feet, are ridiculous. Oh, Valencia just scored on Manchester United. So as Ederson makes a save.
Sergio Romero gives up one. There's Batshuayi, by the way.
And we'll get to Manchester United in a moment. Because Pogba has started this game, and in the last topic when we talk motivational issues, we'll get into that one. But let's get on to the second topic. I mean, this is unprecedented that I'm transitioning before the whistle. I mean, that's
I blew the whistle. I think you just
Did you?
I think you're just so used to going through it.
Yeah, that I blocked
it
out.
You didn't even notice it.
Yeah. Wow, that's you blew the whistle.
Yeah, I did about 5 minutes ago.
Oh, that's amazing. I mean, at this point, we don't even care.
I think it's the Mumford & Sons concert, too. Your ears are still ringing probably from that.
Yeah, and probably because I'm a bit worse for wear this morning. Amazing concert with our buddies Mumford & Sons.
Yeah.
Went to go see them at MSG, Musto, and producer Adam and I. So much fun. Had a blast.
I think I can't hear anything.
I just have a permanent ring in my ears.
I think you guys are all BFF after the fan fest.
Well, really the reason that we got hooked up, and thank you again, Mumford & Sons, if you're Tad Potters, is Robbie Earle.
Yeah.
Because Mumford's a big Wimbledon fan, and that was a serious... Oh, and City just conceded.
Yeah.
So the Manchester clubs both losing 1-0. All right, let's go on.
That's a good way to segue right into Man City.
So Man City, are they showing weaknesses? Well, we're seeing some right now as they go down 1-0, penalty taken right down the middle. Are we seeing a little bit of Manchester City slipping up? Are we seeing some weaknesses that suggest that Manchester City are human, are catchable, and aren't favorites to win the title, dare I say it? I mean, would anyone believe that? Would anyone say that? That question was asked of Pep, and this is what Pep had to say.
There is no favorite between you and Liverpool.
But we're in December, so of course it's favorite. If you tell me Liverpool can win the Premier League, I would say yes.
Pep saying they're top. It's December. Mm-hmm. Yes, they can win the Premier League. Of course they can win the Premier League. And I think Pep realizes his team do still, and as good as they are, as good as they've been, they do still have the same quality that every team who goes and wins a title, any team we've seen win the title in the Premier League recently, they have that moment where they can switch off, and when they show up and don't produce their best, don't have their best attitude, don't have the best work rate, the best effort. I mean, we saw a Manchester City team that didn't hold their quality to the level that's expected of them, and it's why winning consecutive titles is so difficult, because it happens. Mm-hmm. I mean, this happens to so many groups, and it's amazing that Pep has been able to at every club win and retain the title, because it's just a massive challenge. So I don't think we're seeing weakness. I think we're seeing what you expect from any team that wins the title, and also any team in the balance of a season. I mean, you're not going to perform at the best every single game, and teams like Liverpool and Spurs and Chelsea, I mean, they've performed in games at a lower level and not at their best, but were able to get through at times. And Manchester City haven't needed that, because they've been at such a high level. So not really concerned about them. The one weak spot, and I say this without judgment or condescension, because I love them and it's understandable, but Gabriel Jesus mm-hmm. is not maintaining the level that Sergio Aguero yep. sets. And so some of that is coming back from injury is really tough. I mean, even when you're fully fit, you still are either rusty or don't entirely trust you are at your best. And at the highest level, moments of hesitation and slight pauses is the difference between pulling something off or not. And he's had a series of injuries now. And he was preferred to Sergio Aguero. I mean, mm-hmm. it's not too long ago where Aguero was waiting for his opportunities yeah. because Gabriel Jesus was performing so well. So that doesn't concern me, because I don't think all of a sudden he's not the player we know he is. It's just an issue that he's not at his best. So I wonder if next time Aguero is not available, I think Pep would probably use Sterling in that role and give him an opportunity where you play Mahrez, Sané, and Sterling before he tries to play Gabriel Jesus through a struggle.
Well, the thing is, that's what he did, though, against Chelsea, yeah. and it didn't work.
Well,
they dominated that first half, and then I think that once Chelsea got that late goal, it kind of threw City into a funk a little bit.
Yeah.
It was kind of off the rest of the game. But
and I thought that was less about Sterling than it was about it was a Chelsea side. The irony is it's kind of the Conte Chelsea that Conte used against Barcelona, if you remember. If you go back to the game, Eden Hazard said they could play for 3 more hours and he wouldn't touch the ball. Remember the game he was used as a false nine, which he was used by Conte in this game. You know, Pep has struggled against Chelsea, but he struggled against Conte's Chelsea, and he struggled against the Sarri Chelsea that looked like Conte's Chelsea
yep.
that was used against Barcelona as basically a low block counterattacking system with Eden Hazard high up the field, so that when you transition and get him the ball, he's not trying to transition 80 yards, you know, through 8 or 9 players.
Yeah.
You know, he's through, he's 1v1, he's in the attacking third. So Ed Nazard seemed a bit happier with that strategy, even though in the first half they weren't really efficient. They weren't all that effective. So it was less Sterling than it was a good system that worked on the day from Sarri, but also I saw an inability to break through the lines from you know, the Silvas and I think it was Mahrez and Sané, yep. right? So, like, I saw Sterling not get a ton of service and not be put in great positions. Yeah. It wasn't like Gabriel Jesus, who you saw him getting in moments and losing the ball too easily or, you know, failing to get a shot off when he should have.
Well, I think Sterling's similar to Hazard in some ways. He's always going to prefer to be out on the wing as opposed to being running through the middle. I mean, I think he's always more comfortable.
Sterling, yeah, for sure. So and he's better at it.
Yeah, so when you start playing him as your false nine, I think that might start to throw off. That throws him off, and in turn, that could even throw Mahrez and Sané off a little bit because they're more used to playing with Aguero or Jesus, yeah. someone who's more of a traditional number nine. You know, it's just interesting because, you know, I know we have these calls every week, and there are some good questions on it, the call, you know, production calls. And I think it was Arlo.
By the way, Gabriel Jesus just missed a chance you expect him to bury.
Not helping his case.
No.
I think it was Arlo asking the questions to you guys all this week, and he was just asking, you know, what's the one player they can't do without? And I think everybody kind of agreed there's kind of a like-for-like replacement in most positions.
Except for Fernandinho.
Except for Fernandinho. But I think you said, you know, Gundogan could play there maybe. And
yeah,
and,
I mean, that's
Delph.
One of the bigger ones.
Yeah.
But yeah, Aguero.
But I was going to say, does this highlight how good Sergio Aguero's been for them since he's come over? And the other one I was just going to bring up, too, is De Bruyne. You know, he's been out from pretty much the whole season. He came back briefly and then was injured again. This fixture last season, he scored the decisive goal. It was a 1-0 win for Man City at Stamford Bridge. And I think in a lot of people's eyes, that was maybe one of the title defining moments because they'd just beaten the defending champions in their house. And you kind of, I think, at least when I look back at that season, that was the moment it shifted where you're like, okay, City's in control now. This is now the new best team in England. And I'm not saying Chelsea's now back to being the best team in England or anything like that, or that because City lost this game. But it just, I think it shows you have players like De Bruyne, maybe someone like Aguero who gets the big goal in 2012 at the final kick of the season. They come up in these moments when you need them to, and maybe they needed one of those two or both of those two players in there for a game like this. It could make the difference.
Well, how far away? What's the latest on De Bruyne?
I'll try and check.
Yeah, check that real quick.
And Aguero's, he's not. I don't know if he's in today, but they keep. Because at first it was kind of like, oh, he might come back, and now, you know, we don't know when he's really fully healthy, I guess, for Aguero.
I mean, they've been able to thrive without De Bruyne, but you get the sense they need Aguero back pretty soon. I mean, I just it's hard to find weaknesses in this group. It really is.
So overall, you're not concerned?
No.
So
I'm not. I just think you expect, and this it was my calculus for predicting Liverpool to win the title. Was based on two things. It was based on thinking Man City would prioritize Champions League now that they had the title. It's really what they wanted when they brought Pep in. I thought they'd go deeper in that competition than Liverpool would. I still think they will. And then I also thought, you know, you have to calculate for the drop-off after winning a title. I mean, it happens to every team.
Okay.
So, not concerned, really. So, let's get on to motivational problems. This is such an interesting debate, and it happens with every time a manager is sacked. I feel like we have the discussion, which is a fair discussion to have. Is this the coach's fault or the player's fault? How much blame is on the coach? How much blame is on the players? Did the players phone it in? Are they not performing at their best? If so, is that the manager's fault, or is this a motivational issue? You know, the Paul Pogba conundrum is an issue. The do you play him through bad form when his form doesn't really warrant a starting position? You know, we had that talk the other day when he wasn't started in the game against Arsenal.
You and Musto, right? I think.
Lee said the same thing. It seemed like it was pretty universal that we all said he doesn't deserve to start based on the way he's performing. The bigger question is, why is he performing that way? Because ultimately, you want a Paul Pogba on the field. And so we're wondering if, and this has been an ongoing saga, Jose Mourinho saying he'll never wear the armband again, saying that publicly, which was a remarkable statement, a damaging statement not only to Pogba, to Mourinho, but also to the club, because when Mourinho goes, he puts the club in an awkward position. And then he supposedly, in a report, called him a virus in front of the rest of the team. So it seemed all of that as a crescendo leading to being benched in the Arsenal game was evidence that the relationship is broken and it can't be repaired. Now, this happens at every club with Jose Mourinho, where he picks a fight with a high-profile star, and almost every single time, Mourinho loses. Right now, Paul Pogba's losing this one.
Yep.
Because the team performed well without him. He has been performing poorly. He's on enormous wages. His agent runs his mouth. It's on this one, and this is me talking, someone that's so critical of Jose Mourinho. It's easier to be on Mourinho's side than it is to be on Paul Pogba's side. And I thought Mourinho, in his press conference recently when asked about this, I thought he gave a really good answer. And it was a calm Mourinho that I think it's typical of what he's done in the past, which is tear someone down to build them back up. So this is what Mourinho said when he was asked about Pogba's form.
He has to play with the same mentality as the team is playing. Paul can be a fantastic player. He has the potential to be a fantastic player. And against Valencia, he's going to start. And against Valencia, he's going to have a fantastic football game to play and to show everybody how good he is.
So I liked that from Mourinho. The question was, what does he have to do? I think the question was, what does he have to do to get back in the lineup, right? So he's right. You know, and if you were to forget a lot of the craziness between the two of them and some of the things I don't agree with Mourinho that he did, some of the things that were I think irresponsible and immature and airing dirty laundry in public, something managers typically don't do. If you forget those things, this is great man management from Jose Mourinho. Sit him out of a game. He's not performing well. And compliment him while offering publicly what he's got to do to get back on the team. And the team looked good without him. Here's the big problem is Jose Mourinho is the part of this formula that coincides with his bad form, because Paul Pogba can be a fantastic player. Well, he was a fantastic player at Juve under
Allegri.
He was a fantastic player for France under Deschamps. So why isn't he under you? Now, Pogba deserves some of that blame, right? Because it doesn't matter if you don't like your manager. It doesn't matter if you don't like your position. You're a professional player. You need to perform at a high level. Now, if you're not performing well because you're not set up to succeed, that's different than what we've been seeing from Paul Pogba. Because honestly, some of the stuff we've seen looks like he either is not interested or isn't very good. And we know the latter is absolutely ridiculous. We know he's a remarkably talented player, probably the most talented player, definitely the most talented player on Manchester United, probably one of the more talented players in the league. So the performances are baffling because that's not Paul Pogba. So why is that happening? It's easy to think Mourinho is the cause. And the trouble is you're going to lose Mourinho as a Manchester United decision maker, the Glazers, Ed Woodward, or if they eventually get a director of football. You know that your time is going to come to an end with Mourinho. If you were a betting person, you'd think it comes to an end before your time with Paul Pogba comes to an end. If you're a commercial business, which this is where Ed Woodward's really smart, Paul Pogba is a much bigger asset to you than Jose Mourinho is. Because Jose Mourinho is actually hurting not only your biggest asset, Paul Pogba, but the biggest asset, the brand of Manchester United. I mean, the stock price was at an all-time low a few weeks ago based on not only the volatility and the mediocrity, but also how tough it is to watch the team and some of the comments Jose Mourinho makes that are self-serving at the and damaging to the brand. So Mourinho can't win this one. The only way he wins this one is if this Mourinho, the calm, great communicating man manager Mourinho, is the one we start to see now. Mm-hmm. And it's no surprise it coincides with good results. Mm-hmm. Mourinho's fueled his whole system in terms of who he is as a manager is powered by wins. He can't be himself in a charming way, in a way that doesn't look ridiculous, without wins.
Yeah.
Wins make Mourinho possible. So he's getting some wins now and some good performances. And so if they can ride that, and I'm watching the game right now, and you know, Pogba seems to be playing in a bit of a deeper role like he has before. Couple moments where he looks good, looks sharp. But is he putting him out here to test to see his reaction so he knows if he should play him against Liverpool on the weekend? I mean, that's the big question.
I think so, yeah.
If that's the case, you also don't want to play him 90 minutes in this game. So I think this is a good idea for Mourinho to test him out here, play him for an hour, you know, maybe play him for an hour, see how he's going, see how he's performing, you know, a pat on the back when he comes off the field, and have a private conversation with him in training the next day and say, that's what I expect from you. He probably wouldn't tell me starting, but he'd say, I'm going to need you against Liverpool, and then put him in the team.
Yeah.
Because if he doesn't play him against Arsenal, and he doesn't play him against Liverpool, and he plays him in a Champions League game that really doesn't matter, I think this thing's going to go south, and that's where you're going to see the bad side of Paul Pogba. I mean, don't forget, this is the same Paul Pogba who was a teenager who told Sir Alex Ferguson, I'm leaving this club because I should be playing for the first team more.
Yeah, I don't know if he was offside here, but he just missed a sitter.
He looked over to the flag. I don't know if the flag went up, but it was one of those desperate for the flag to go up situations. So it's just... Unfortunately, there's a situation where two huge assets, Manchester United, the football club, and Paul Pogba, the world-class player, are both underperforming. And it's hard to not blame Jose Mourinho for that. And I just, this is the true moment, and we keep hitting these. This is the pivotal moment. If they have a bad performance or on the wrong end of a lopsided result, that Paul Pogba performs in poorly or doesn't perform it at all, this thing is a powder keg that's going to explode.
Well, the thing I wanted to add is the schedule's in Jose's favor right now, because he can bench him against Liverpool, because, and he can make the excuse, well, he played, like, maybe he will play in the full 90 minutes in this game, just to say that he's played 90 minutes, he can't start against Liverpool, but he's available off the bench. Then 6 days later, they play Cardiff City. He could bring him back in for that game, start him that game. Then 4 days later, they play Huddersfield. He could rest him that. He could bench him again, but say, hey, he just played 4 days earlier. I need him to play. With the busy fixture period coming,
a lot of games.
He can make up. It can be his fallback excuse every time, whether he benches him or starts him, that he's resting other players.
Yeah.
So I think he can kind of skirt around the issue for the next month or so, because he can make that argument. Now, if it goes 4 or 5 straight games where he doesn't start him at all, then there's a big problem.
So I mentioned it before, Jose gets into these issues with star players. Let's talk about another star player at Jose's former club that you have to give Jose Mourinho credit for. Eden Hazard won the PFA Player of the Year in the season that he did what Jose asked of him, right? Like the first season, there were a couple of high-profile examples of Eden Hazard not tracking his runner in Champions League. I remember maybe against Atletico Madrid.
It was in the semifinals, yep.
Yeah, and so he got Eden Hazard to be more of a two-way winger with defensive responsibility, but an attacking irreverence, right? And then one of the quote-unquote rats that the fans were saying tried to get Jose Mourinho fired, Eden Hazard was one of the drastically underperforming players that season. So Maurizio Sarri said something in a press conference recently that was really interesting.
It's very difficult to find great motivations for my team. I don't know why. we have to work on this, and we have to play, I think, all matches with the same level of motivation, with the same level of determination, application. Otherwise, it's a big problem. We know very well that if we want to stay in the top four, we have to fight. But we have to fight in every match. Otherwise, a win like this with a very against a very great team is useless.
So we'll go a little extra time here to finish this point. That's really interesting because we see that. And now this is multiple managers having the same issue with this club. There's motivational problems. And center in all of these discussions and always present is Eden Hazard. So this is an argument in favor of Jose Mourinho when he was sacked. Listen, that was the Eva Caneiro stuff, and there were a lot of things he did, again, that were repugnant behavior that is Mourinho's ego getting in the way of and becoming bigger than the club and the task, right? But Eden Hazard's performance, you can't blame on Mourinho, I don't think, because, listen, maybe Eden Hazard was, after he won PFA Player of the Year and they won the title, was sick of doing what Mourinho asked him to do. Now, that happens, and that happens to a lot of Mourinho teams. That's one of the reasons that there's an expiration date for Mourinho. They just get sick of playing a style they're more talented and more too talented to play and also just don't enjoy and only do it as a means to an end to win a title. Once they have a title, they just don't want to deal with it anymore. But it's not like Jose Mourinho picked out Eden Hazard and criticized him a lot publicly and benched him and did all these things. I mean, really, of all the star situations that Mourinho has had in his career, you know, with Ronaldo and Casillas and and you can't say that Eden Hazard's one of them. Like, right? I don't, like, that situation didn't deteriorate because Jose picked Eden Hazard out and was pitting Hazard against the club and Hazard against Mourinho. That's what it feels like he's doing with Pogba, but that didn't happen with Eden Hazard. So there's a motivational issue with Chelsea, and I don't think it's team-wide. I honestly think it's an Eden Hazard issue because he's so good he's like the team's mood ring. Like, how he's feeling on the day is how they'll perform.
Do you think that's contagious, though, and that can rub off on other players?
Yeah, especially when you depend on him so much.
Yeah.
But it's a weird one. It's a weird one. He was amazing in the World Cup. He wore the armband, right? He wore the armband for Belgium at the World Cup. So obviously some managers don't think that about him, or maybe don't see that, or maybe the armband was actually an insurance policy to make sure he knew as the captain, he couldn't. Sometimes managers do that, give you the armband because you typically are someone that has a motivational issue. But man, Chelsea do have from time to time this issue where they just don't get up for games.
Yeah, that 2015-16 season he had is still just kind of astonishing, that he won the player of the season the year before Chelsea won the title. He only scored 4 goals the next year and just basically disappeared that whole season, and why they ended up finishing in 10th place.
Remember the game? It might have been the game Mourinho was fired afterwards. Remember
the game?
Yeah, where he wouldn't come back up on the field. Remember he was like, he had an injury.
Mourinho tried to shake his hand. That might have been frustration with an injury. I don't know, but.
But from what I remember him like really not being injured.
Yeah.
Him just kind of being like, yeah, I'm not, you know, and making the injury more than it was. Maybe I'm being unfair, but that's how I remember that situation, being like, this is weird. He should be playing, and it looks like he has a knock and just doesn't want to go back out there.
Yeah, it could be. But, you know, the thing Sarri said, and I think this gets kind of overlooked almost all the time, really, when we look at the Premier League in general or any of these leagues, it's just how we, even as the way we cover the league sometimes, we probably take certain matches for granted. He basically said, this win against Man City is meaningless if we can't do it against the other teams. And he's thinking three days earlier. So it's just fun. And like that kind of went unnoticed because that was the same day as Manchester United Arsenal, another big match.
Yeah.
And it's just funny because I think, I don't want to say like we as the media are to blame, but we love these big matchups because they're always the most exciting. They've got the most star power and all this. But it just shows you how important, how tough it is over the course of a season to really play at a top level. And these little matches we might forget about or we don't even notice. Like most of us were barely watching that Chelsea Wolves match. And that could be one of the matches that ends up costing them potentially a spot in the top four, or who knows if they get close to the title again.
Well, it's just wild that they could be absolutely thrashed by Spurs and be languid and kind of unimaginative against Wolves, and then do that against City. Yeah. Now the difference is that's the first time we've seen Sarri's Chelsea in a really defensive shell, which is not really his style. So he made not a tactical adjustment in terms of formation, but in how he deployed his system and just had it sit a lot deeper and obviously played with a false nine because Giroud was on the bench. I think Morata wasn't available. I think it's demonstrative of the fact that Chelsea have issues that are new based on how Sarri's system is, what it takes to run it, and the personnel you need, but also issues that are about this group. And I think Eden Hazard is always in that group of underperformers when you're disappointed with Chelsea.
I think this will be the last question I ask you to kind of wrap it up. Eden Hazard and Paul Pogba are both two players that when people say, the Messi-Ronaldo dominance of who the two best players in the world, whenever that finally ends, which it doesn't actually look like it's going to end anytime soon, but, Hazard and Pogba are two of the players that are thrown out there that could be the next best player in the world.
Yeah.
And I just wonder, when you see them go through these tough phases or rough patches or however you want to define it, does this show why they're maybe not quite at that level of greatness? If they can't find a way, it shouldn't matter who their manager is. Messi's had five or six different managers at Barcelona now, I think, and he's basically been the same every single time. I mean, Guardiola got the best out of him, and since then he's been unbelievable. But should these – I mean, look at Ronaldo. Ronaldo's had how many different managers in his career? Does this show that these players, if they're really going to be considered one of the best in the world, need to find a way to consistently perform – regardless who their manager is?
Well, so the quick answer is yes. This isn't a talent issue. Both of them are talented enough to be in the discussion for best player in the world. The reason Messi and Ronaldo are always top of that list is in large part because of talent, but mainly because of consistency.
Yep.
And consistency is a mentality thing. Mm-hmm. I mean, the strength of their mentality. And if you go through any of the GOATs, right? I mean, go through Michael Jordan and Mia Hamm and some of these. It's an ability to maintain a very, very high level of competitive desire, of focus, and of quality.
Yeah.
And it's the hardest part of the game.
Yeah, consistency and longevity, right?
Yeah. So that... the two of them probably will never be thought of. And listen, when Messi and Ronaldo are gone, the opportunity is there for, I think you're going to see a rotation of best player. And that's what you typically see is like the best player in the world, Ronaldo, Kaká, and Rivaldo. It was a rotating thing because keeping that form of being the best in the world is so difficult.
Yeah.
Because the game's variable. Every game's different. Your body feels different. You sleep in a different place. You're in a different atmosphere. That day, you ate something that you don't typically eat, and you feel off. I mean, it's windy. It's rainy. I mean, all the variables to still maintain that high level consistently, like Ronaldo and Messi have, is absolutely insane.
Yeah.
So it's not an insult, really, to Pogba and Hazard. It's really just... it's more showing you how phenomenal and rare a Messi and a Ronaldo is. Mm. So we'll see. But we got Manchester City and Manchester United still trailing, both 1-0.
Going to halftime.
Halftime here. So we're gonna head out of here and go watch the second half. So you guys do the same thing. Enjoy the Champions League. Although you're listening to this, which means you already watched it and you know the result. But we'll be back next week. Stay on your feet.